House Speaker Mike Johnson was asked,
"How will it end?"
His answer wasn't one furloughed Fed workers wanted to hear.
"We have no idea."
He said that's up to the Dems, but
"The Democrats appear perfectly happy to keep the political theater going while real people suffer."
So the government is shut down, but there's a whole lot of things going on. Trump keeps moving, like a bulldozer taking down everything in his path. Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of stories from Odyssey stations across the country. The place where we're not afraid to dig in. The first thing we're going to serve up is this. While the Democrats argue and the government is at a perceived standstill, the Trump administration secretly authorized the CIA to conduct covert action in Venezuela. The authorization is the latest step in the Trump administration's intensifying pressure campaign against Venezuela. The goal is to drive authoritarian leader Nicolas Maduro out of power. Here's the latest.
The government's not doing their part. Nope. They're still shut down. Day 16. Is Trump derangement syndrome on its way out? You know, with this peace in the Middle East, it is a big deal. And finally, even some Democrats had to admit that, you know, Trump got it done. Yeah, I don't know how you can be a Nazi and you bring peace to the Middle East and you put accords into effect and you're the number one ally of Israel. I never did quite get that. And they're still doing that name-calling thing, at least in some factions. But I think there are some that are kind of getting away from that. They still might not like him, but it's not a complete derangement syndrome. And even Miranda Devine from the New York Post writes about it. She said, it's early days yet, but there are signs of Trump derangement syndrome's on its way out. Middle East peace deal Donald Trump pulled off with sheer force of personality is part of the reason. In a whirlwind 36 hours, the president addressed the Knesset in Jerusalem to hail a new dawn in the Middle East, then flew to sign the Gaza peace deal, flanked by the leaders of Egypt, Turkey, and Qatar, who helped force Hamas's hand. European leaders took a back seat and meekly kowtowed to Trump. So this is a good thing, and hopefully people will begin to heal, mentally heal from Trump derangement syndrome. It's not going to happen overnight, folks. But maybe that's the trend. Hey, I don't know how much play this story is going to get. Honestly, I didn't do a lot of digging, but it wasn't right there. I'd heard it. I think it was Fox News reported earlier this morning. But here's the deal. We got CIA operations in Venezuela. And I can't remember the last time a president admitted that they had CIA operations going on in a foreign country. I mean, we know they go on. The CIA, they are kind of busy. It's what they do. But for Donald Trump to come out and confirm yesterday, he authorized the CIA to conduct covert operations in Venezuela. Wow. Now, I'm not surprised at all by that action being taken. I'm very surprised that he said it out loud. I mean, does that undermine the, you know, covert nature of whatever operation is taking place? I don't know. It's just, I thought it was kind of odd. And, the U.S. is doing everything they can to pressure Nicolas Maduro. You know, he's not a good guy. New York Times first reported the classified directive, citing U.S. officials familiar with the decision, saying the Trump's administration Venezuela strategy aims to remove Maduro from power. Now, you know, whoever leaked that, they might not be a friend of the administration. It doesn't sound like anybody who is a friend of the administration. That's not something that they would do. The administration has offered $50 million for information leading to Maduro's arrest and conviction on drug trafficking charges. The new authority would allow the CIA to carry out lethal operations in Venezuela and conduct a range of operations in the Caribbean. Asked why he authorized the CIA to operate in Venezuela, Trump told reporters his reasons were migration of Venezuelans to the United States and drug trafficking. And his contention is that, you know, Maduro opened up the prisons and sent a bunch of very bad people. Now, according to this article, which is Reuters. Trump has not provided evidence for his claim that Venezuela is sending former prisoners to the U.S. I think we've had many arrests where there were former gang members, whether they tracked them down directly to being from the jails and prisons of Venezuela. I'm not sure about that connection, that nexus, but why wouldn't it be true? We know he's not a friend of this country. We know he's in the drug dealing business. Why wouldn't he send some of the bad guys to set up drug trafficking and just wreak havoc here? Yep. He said the U.S. has made progress intercepting drug shipments at sea and that additional efforts are now focused on overland routes. Okay. I don't disagree with the idea of doing that. It's odd that it's such a public thing. That's all.
Speaking of drugs, here at home, in New Orleans specifically, but in other places across the country, something called green fentanyl is emerging. Here's more from Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio.
Trouble on the North Shore as far as green fentanyl goes. What is all that about? Well, Ashley Rodrigue joins us, spokesperson for the Tangipahoa Parish Sheriff's Office. Help us understand it. Good morning, Ashley. How are you?
Hi, Tommy. I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Tell us what's going on.
Absolutely. So we are fortunate to have really great partnerships both locally and on the federal level with the DEA. And over the past 4 or 5 weeks, we have all been noticing, our narcotics detectives have been noticing a green fentanyl or a green type of drug that they're finding either, unfortunately, in cases where they're getting called to emergency medical emergencies like overdoses, mm-hmm. As well as when making arrests. And so as they started talking to each other, just last week, Hammond PD said they had quite a bit found on a bust. And then, of course, down on the South Shore, too, Jefferson Parish, Slidell PD, St. Tammany Sheriff's Office. And so collectively, everyone said, hey, we need to get the word out. We don't know 100% yet what this is because the chemical testing, of course, is still pending. But we know that right now fentanyl is the thing. And like Sheriff says, it's a marketing tool. A couple months ago, we were talking to you all about pink cocaine, where right. They just added a color to it. But that particular batch or whatever was going around at the time had caused like 4 or 5 OD deaths in a weekend for us. And so, unfortunately, at that time, our awareness effort was sort of after the fact. And this one is proactive in that we're seeing it. And so we want to get the word out before we end up seeing 4 or 5 deaths in a weekend.
Yeah, you know what astounds me, Ashley, is how you don't know what it is, right? You haven't done the chemical analysis on it yet, or it's not in completely, but yet people will ingest it having no idea what it is. Tell me about the different shapes or different forms this stuff comes in.
Absolutely. So that's really what the kicker of this one is. It's not necessarily that it's green and that's what the warning is about, mm-hmm. but what is being seen of this particular kind is it's not just in the powder form. It's not just in the form that can be injected or snorted. It's also coming in a gel or a tar-like form. And for people who are looking for something that they can put in their vapes that tend to be more of that type, they're not thinking that it's going to include fentanyl because it hasn't before. That's generally been a THC or a CBD type of scenario. The problem is that this is looking very much like that, and people have the opportunity to put this into a vape, and they don't know that they're getting fentanyl, and they don't know that they're taking an incredible risk with their lives. And so that's really one of the biggest reasons why this push is coming out, to let people know the thing that's out there right now, they need to be aware. It's coming in many different forms they're not used to, even if they're trying to be conscious of not involving themselves with fentanyl, that this is something that's going to come across to them that they don't know it.
Is that how they use it, Ashley, in a vape primarily?
Well, there are not normally. That's the thing. Not normally. It's usually something that's they will snort it or they will ingest it. Inject it. And in this instance, there's an opportunity where it's being made in a gel or in a tar-like form. And that is what then can be dropped into or included in other things that go into a vape. And that's not what people are expecting. So that's something that we're trying to really get out there, that it's not just green. It is more like a sidewalk chalk than a powder. And it's also coming in a gel or a tar-like form. And it's not like a Kelly green. It's kind of like an off green, darker.
Olive
green,
almost,
yeah,
like an army green?
Not quite that dark.
Like
not
an army green?
Not quite that dark, a little bit lighter. But, yeah, it's just we need people to know it's not just about a new color. It is absolutely about, you know, it's a life-saving measure that we're trying to get this out. And like you just mentioned, you know, people, it's astounding that they don't know what it is, but they'll still ingest it. And that is substance abuse. That is addiction. It is a very difficult situation for people to manage and kick. And that's why we also included in this message the existence of the program Operation Angel, because a lot of times that addiction is so strong and people think they're either going to have to get arrested or die in order to break that chain. And we want people to know that's not the case.
So let's talk about this fentanyl. Is it more dangerous than, because you said fentanyl's the thing, and unfortunately it's the thing that kills people. It's also, for whatever reason, seems to be the thing that people are looking for that abuse drugs.
Right. What, as much as I understand in having conversations with our narcotics folks, the fentanyl, because it is, of course, an incredibly powerful opioid, adds something more to, of course, already dangerous and, you know, heavily affected drugs like cocaine. And so the dealers are trying to stand out. It's all a marketing ploy. You know, they don't care about these lives. They just care about the dollar. And they're trying to have what they call the quote-unquote hottest or most quote-unquote fire product that's out there. And the way that that is determined is, unfortunately, by how many people either get as close to OD or death as possible and get brought back. Or, of course, when people hear about the experience others have gone through and they say how extreme it is.
And that makes that people want it, not avoid it?
Apparently.
Wow.
I don't, you know, I don't have that experience.
No, I understand that. That's just crazy, you know, because I was thinking when you said fentanyl's the thing, I'm thinking, well, yeah, you would think people would know to avoid it, but actually, unfortunately, it's just the opposite. Talk about the dangers of fentanyl in general, if you would, Ashley, please.
Absolutely. So, again, it is a powerful synthetic opioid, and it's 50 times more potent than heroin. And a lethal dose can be just the equivalent of 2 grains of salt. And, you know, what's happening is that these dealers are using it to sprinkle into things like heroin or cocaine and sometimes even marijuana to give it that, you know, advancement over the competition. It's incredibly sad, and we just hope that people will choose to go a different route where they're at with their addiction as opposed to continuing to find something that gives them an even greater high that they're looking to fill whatever void that they've been using.
Do you guys have any idea where this is coming from?
From my perspective on the local front, no. I'm certainly, you know, proud that we work with the DEA, who's got that bigger picture and are trying to determine where it's coming from, whether it's something that's coming from another country, whether it's something that's coming from possibly, unfortunately, people in the medical industry who may be, you know, selling it or sharing it on black market when they shouldn't be. Mm. They're working on that. At the end of the day, you know, our goal here is when we find it, we let the public know we're seeing it, and we need them to know what's happening with it, and so they can avoid losing a loved one, losing their own lives, and really just continuing down that tragic path.
2 grains of salt, that much can be fatal, correct?
Absolutely. It's the equivalent of 2 milligrams of fentanyl is just 2 grains of salt.
Thank you, Ashley. I appreciate it.
So, Trump is working hard to fight international drug traffickers and sending the National Guard wherever he can to fight crime on big city streets. And how's that all going? Here's the latest on crime overall.
Welcome back. Lots going on in Washington. Have you seen this little flare-up over the Arizona representative who got elected in a special election? And she's claiming that Mike Johnson won't swear her in because she would be the 218th vote on a petition to release the Epstein files. Johnson says that's not true, but that's part of what's going on today. Now, speaking of the Epstein files, Kash Patel is planning on having a news conference today at some point with President Trump. We don't know what all that's about, but maybe Evan Brown does with Fox News Radio. He's covering that story today.
And it was a press conference to announce crime numbers, crime statistics in the cities where the federal government has deployed assets, namely the FBI and others to help combat violent crime, often to the chagrin of local leaders, like, for instance, in Chicago and in Portland, where they say they don't need the federal help, where President Trump says, oh, yes, you do. Some of those numbers have been drastically reduced. The mayors in those towns have said that, the crime was coming down anyway. But the president has made fighting violent crime, specifically things that are gang and drug related, a cornerstone of his new administration. And he even admits that he really didn't have these plans while running for office, that he had crime as an issue, but as it related more towards border matters. But he's seen that there has been a need for the federal government to step in some of our bigger cities where crime is running rampant and people are not safe.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that San Francisco would likely be the next one because as per his words, a mess.
Yeah. And I'm sure they'll give a big welcome carpet to both ICE officials and the FBI. One thing that I found interesting was the feedback that came from both Memphis police and D.C. police. Just talking about how the support of both ICE as well as the National Guard has allowed them to execute warrants. A lot of outstanding warrants have been executed, which is why those numbers were so high that they released yesterday. And they said that just frees up their police to actually do police work instead of patrol.
I mean, look, extra manpower in any scenario is always going to be more helpful, right? I mean, that's always going to be the case. And the FBI has really stepped in too, because FBI does have some purview, especially with regard to trafficking and whatnot. And even Kash Patel, the FBI director, said that they've already this year nabbed four of the people on the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
Yeah.
As compared to during the Biden administration, where four were arrested over the whole course of the 4-year term. So that's a pretty big improvement. Of course, four come off the list, four new people end up on the list. It's a never ending list. But the point is that there has been a major step up here. And yes, it has come at the ire of mayors and governors in Democratic cities and states that say that this is just a political posturing move by the president and it's not really doing it.
Well, here's the thing, like Stephen Miller's a little bit of a lightning rod for the administration on this, but I thought the point he made yesterday about J.B. Pritzker, I think was spot on. Let me play this for people that hadn't heard it. This is just a part of what he said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a fool and he's a moron, but also, most importantly, Sean, he hates America. And let's just be honest about it. You can't love your country and then fight President Trump to keep murderers murdering.
Yeah, but I mean, I think my argument on this, Evan, is to a Governor Pritzker, if he ever would agree to come on my show, would be, what's your number? I mean, how many murders a year are okay with you? And if you've seen a blueprint in Washington, D.C., for example, or Memphis, on how you could reduce those numbers, why wouldn't you want to enroll in that?
Well, I think if I could make it even more reductive than that, I think one of the things the new Trump administration has done very, very well, and Stephen Miller certainly part of this, is it really puts the argument as in, why are you against fighting crime? Yeah. Why are you for murder? I mean,
it's what they're defending, right?
Yeah, they have put their political adversaries, in this case Democrats, really into their own painted corner, and it's never something that they're going to win, because if you're going to go for reelection and say I prevented federal cops from apprehending gang related murderers, it doesn't look good. So yeah. The Trump administration knows that, and they've worked that to their benefit, and of course to the benefit of people, because there is a reduction in crime that is palpable. Whether or not it was happening on its own without federal involvement is an argument some people will make and some people won't accept. And that's, I think, kind of secondary to the idea that the streets are getting safer in some of these cities. And that's what most people care about.
Yeah. And ultimately, for the people that live there, I mean, I don't know what things are like in where you are in Florida, but for the people we talked to in D.C., they're like, yeah, it was kind of a relief to get to know you could go out to dinner at night and not have to worry about maybe being carjacked or robbed on on the way home.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes a difference. You know, look, every city's going to have certain bad neighborhoods or whatnot. I think that kind of goes with it. But, you know, when you're on the main thoroughfare and you can't walk down the street during during daylight hours without risk of being assaulted, then you've got a problem in your city.
It's certain, you certainly do. Evan Brown, thank you for your time this morning.
Welcome.
San Francisco is the land of Nancy Pelosi. How's she doing these days? Check in with Rich Zeoli at WPHT Radio.
All righty, so remember that train wreck Katie Porter from California? She's a friggin' mess. Well, she's now trying to walk back everything that she did wrong when she was just being herself. See, people like this always make me laugh because they're horrible human beings, and their horribleness just comes out, and you can't get away from the fact that they're absolutely horrible. And if you remember, Katie Porter did a number of things that were absolutely horrible. A number of things. So let's review, shall we? let's review. She was caught berating her staff over a Zoom that this woman who works for her got in the shot. That was one of the things that came out. Get out of my effing shot. There was that. But the big one was the time that she was sitting there with a reporter, and then she decided she was done answering questions. And then that was it. She was done. She was just done. She just shut it down. Let's go back to that. Start there. Cut number 12. It was a CBS local interview, and she's running for governor of California, and she just got fed up with the interview, and she was done. Cut 12.
What do you say to the 40% of California voters who you'll need in order to win, who voted for Trump?
How would I need them in order to win, man?
Well, unless you think you're going to get 60% of the vote. You think you'll get 60%. Everybody who did not vote for Trump will vote for you. That's what you're
saying. In a general election, yes. If it is me versus a Republican, I think that I will win the people who did not vote for Trump.
What if it's you versus another Democrat?
I don't intend that to be the case.
So how do you not intend that to be the case? Are you going to ask them not to run?
No. I'm saying I'm going to build the support. I have the support already in terms of name recognition. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to do the very best I can to make sure that we get through this primary in a really strong position. But let me be clear with you. I represented Orange County. I represented a purple area. Mm-hmm. I have stood on my own 2 feet and won Republican votes before. That's not something every candidate in this race can say. If you're from a deep blue area, if you're from LA or you're from Oakland, you don't have an experience.
But you just said you don't need those Trump voters.
Well, you asked me if I needed them to win.
So you don't.
I feel like this is unnecessarily argumentative. What is your question?
The question is the same thing I asked everybody, that this is being called the empowering voters to stop Trump's power grab. Every other candidate has answered this question. This is not
argumentative. And I said I support it.
So, and the question is, what do you say to the 40% of voters who voted for Trump?
Oh, I'm happy to say that. It's the do you need them to win part that I don't understand. I'm happy to answer the question as you have it written, and I'll answer it.
And we've also asked the other candidates, do you think you need any of those 40% of California voters to win, and you're saying no, you don't.
No, I'm saying I'm going to try to win every vote I can. And what I'm saying to you is that,
well, to those voters, okay, so you,
I don't want to keep doing this. I'm going to call it. Okay. Thank you.
You're not going to do the interview with us?
Nope, not like this. I'm not with 7 follow-ups to every single question you ask.
She's every done. Other candidate has answered.
I don't care. I don't care. I want to have a pleasant, positive conversation in which you ask me about every issue on this list. And if every question you're going to make up a follow-up question, then we're never going to get there.
Ms.
And
Porter,
we're just going to circle around.
I am an investigative
reporter.
I have never
had to do this before, ever.
You've never had to have a conversation with
to end
a
an
reporter?
Interview.
Okay, but every other candidate has done this.
What part of I'm me? I'm running for governor because I'm a leader. So I am going to make...
So you're not
going
to answer questions from reporters? Okay, why don't we go through? I will continue to ask follow-up questions because that's my job as a journalist, but I will go through and ask these. And if you don't want to answer, you don't want to answer. So nearly every legislative...
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you. And I don't want this on camera.
I don't want to have an unhappy experience with you either. I would love to continue to ask these questions so that we can show our viewers what every candidate feels about every one of these issues that they care about. And redistricting is a massive issue. We're going to do an entire story just on the responses to that question. And I've asked everybody the same follow-up question.
Now, listen, that may have been just a bad day. Maybe she was just having a bad day. You know, it happens, right? Everybody has bad days, and then what are you going to do? Okay, but then there was the time that she yelled at a staffer to get out of her effing shot. So maybe that was also a bad day. Maybe she had just another bad day. Cut number 11.
We did a study recently this fall in September, and what it showed is if we don't electrify our transportation sector, that we're going to lose more than 500,000 Californians dying prematurely to air pollution and other problems, and the state could lose get out of my shot.
I wanted to tell you that that's actually incorrect. It's not that it's electric vehicles. It's that if we don't make the commitments under the Paris Climate Accord.
Okay. It does. Okay. You also were in my shot before that. Stay out of my shot. Okay. I'm going to start again with electric vehicles saving us money.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay. Now let's cue up cut number 10, because maybe that was just a bad day. Maybe that was also a bad day. So, you know, I mean, who doesn't have two bad days? Am I right? Cut 10.
Oh, yes. This is why I didn't want to. I need the lights off, the bright lights. I'm so sorry, but I am about to get on. Bernard, I need you to turn these off. These that are killing me. Hang on 1 second, everybody.
No, we should put the computer up on the
phone. Yes, yes, we should have. Yeah. Yes. Okay, everybody, I'm not that dark.
It's too dark.
Just a minute.
Could be a bad day. You know, blood sugar low. Could be hangry. Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody, I'm sorry about that. I am in a TV studio getting ready to go on Cuomo, and so I had all those studio lights on me, and I couldn't see myself or see you guys.
Okay, but then I know what you're thinking. Could there be more videos? So let's cue up cut number 9 here. Could there be more videos of her berating staffers and being snarky to them and sarcastic to them? Because remember, she could have just been having a bad day. So the answer to that, of course, would be no. There are no more videos out there. I was just having a bad day. I was hangry. My blood sugar was low. You know how it goes. So then no more videos of you berating staffers or talking to everybody like you are an entitled bee. Right? Cut 9.
Should California voters feel confident that there aren't any more Katie Porter videos out there?
Well, what I know is that I could have done better in those moments. I'm going to be focused on earning their votes and earning their trust. That's true in every election. I've only ever had tough elections. Mm-hmm. So I'm absolutely aware that I'm going to have to continue to show them. I'm going to have to answer every question. I'm glad I got to continue that interview and finish that interview and answer all her questions. And that's what I'm going to continue to do, to show Californians not only that I understand their problems, but that I have the will and the strength of character to actually get something done about them.
But not just the CBS interview, the interview with the staffer. Can voters be confident that there won't be another one of those videos that's going to come to light?
What I do know is that I could have done better in that situation.
But that's not a no. So is there potentially another video that we're going to see?
Nikki, I'm going to be honest with you. I know that that video was several years ago, as you know, and apologize to the staffer. That's super important to me, and will continue to try to hold myself to do better. That's what I can promise.
But not that there's not going to be any more videos, because that's what people are wondering. Are we going to see something else like that?
I can tell you what I've told you, which is that I'm taking responsibility for this situation, and I'm also not going to back down from fighting back for California, from being tough. Right. I don't think this is a moment where the same old is going to cut it. But that doesn't change the fact that what I did to that staffer was wrong. I've acknowledged it to her in that moment, and I'm acknowledging it now.
So there are other videos, aren't there? And they're going to be coming out, aren't they? That's how I kind of interpreted that. I think it's fair to say there's probably a whole library of videos about to come out. And Matt DeSantis, you also wanted to remind me of a time that she did what to her husband?
Well, this might be the wildest Katie Porter story. So a while back, Politico reported that Katie Porter's ex-husband, Matthew Hoffman, alleged that during a 2006 argument, Porter raised a ceramic bowl of steaming hot mashed potatoes and dumped it on his head, which actually left behind burns. He also accused her of verbally abusing him and throwing objects at him. And she also restricted his use of a cell phone.
I mean, who among us hasn't thrown a scalding hot dish of mashed potatoes at our spouse's head? Am I right? You know, let the first person who has not thrown scalding hot mashed potatoes on their spouse's head cast the first mashed potato. Am I right?
We've all been there.
We've all been there. And you know the saying, those, if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to be going after somebody for throwing scalding hot mashed potatoes on their spouse's head, those people usually live in scalding mashed potato homes, if you catch my drift.
I also love that a grown man wasn't allowed to use his cell phone because Katie Porter said so.
Well, would you want to get scalding hot mashed potatoes thrown at your head a second time? No.
I guess he learned his lesson.
Yeah, so if she says, put down that phone, he's like, okay, all right, no problem. She's got, can't you just see her like a total psycho, like Kathy Bates in Misery, just whipping her mashed potatoes, got a big ladle, just staring at him and like picking up the ladle and being like, put down the phone. And you see the steam coming off the mashed potatoes and it's like, put it down. Okay. It's down. That phone's down. Phone's down. And then he goes to pick it up again. And then boom, mashed potatoes are right in his face. Could have been worse. Could have been sweet potatoes. At least mashed potatoes are delicious. Once you get over the scalding sort of, you know, third degree burn aspect of everything, they are, in fact, delicious. Just saying.
Assault aside, it was a delicious snack. That's true.
Yeah, delicious snack. And I don't know. I'd rather have scalding hot mashed potatoes thrown in my head than cold mashed potatoes. They get very heavy. That could be like a baseball getting thrown at your face. You know what I mean? If
that's
they're cold
true.
And out of the fridge.
And not as delicious.
And not nearly as delicious. And with Thanksgiving right around the corner and times being tough for people, you know, just saying. So I'm shocked, though, that's her ex-husband, because I figured a marriage like that would have lasted forever.
It seemed like they were pretty happy, yeah. And also, I like your idea. That's a great campaign move. Thanksgiving right around the corner. Maybe Katie Porter's gubernatorial campaign could hand out mashed potatoes for the poor.
I think what they should do is just do a giant food fight at one of her rallies. You know? I mean, go all in. Embrace it, Animal House style. Just, you know, food fight and da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, you know? And then just go all in. Own it. Maybe people would like her if she could actually laugh about herself. She should have said in that video, so are going to be more videos of you berating staff? And she'd have been like, oh, you know it. You know they're coming. Okay?
They're definitely out there. There's no doubt about it. Otherwise, she would have just said no. I can't wait for the next one, honestly.
I'm wondering what it's like to berate a staffer for not finding a video of a staffer being berated by Katie Porter. So you could make a video of Katie Porter berating the staffer for not finding the video of Katie Porter berating the staffer and just be in a giant time loop, you know what I mean? And in sort of a like a mystery wrapped in an enigma right there. To be like, this new video just came out of you berating a staffer. Yeah, but that was because the staffer didn't find videos of me berating her that were clearly out there. So she had it coming because she should have found the videos of me berating her the last time, not this time, then, now. Okay? Got it? You'd be like, yeah, I guess you have a point. Just don't throw scalding mashed potatoes at my head, okay? Anyway, I'm going to miss her when she's no longer running. She might be my favorite candidate right now. But then we have Nancy Pelosi screaming, though.
Oh,
the vampiric one was
yeah.
screaming. So what? So now what happened here today?
So this is on Capitol Hill. A reporter asked her about January 6th, and she was just having none of it. She snapped at the reporter, and I don't want to give anything away. Just listen and enjoy. This is Cut 31, Justin.
Congresswoman Pelosi, are you at all concerned that the new January 6th committee will find you liable for that day? Are you at all concerned about the new January 6th committee finding you liable for that day? Why did you refuse the National Guard on January 6th?
Shut up. I did not refuse the National Guard. The president didn't send it. Why are you coming here with Republican talking points as if you're a serious journalist?
The American people want to know. We still have questions. Thank you.
Shut up! Shut up!
The only questions I take are from friendly journalists, not ones that actually challenge me in anything. Shut up. Don't make Katie Porter throw steaming hot mashed potatoes at your head. All right? Shut up. That vampiric civility. Could have been worse, though. Could have had scalding mashed potatoes thrown at her head and then Nancy Pelosi ripping her neck out and drinking her blood. So, just saying, you know, things could have gone downhill very quickly in that situation.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Smash that subscribe button wherever you get podcasts.